We all know the Christmas story.
We tell it every single year. It's on our Christmas cards, we sing about it in the carols,
and I think every child or grandchild has been in some sort of nativity at kinder or school or church. A man takes his heavily pregnant wife, they've only just been married, and he goes from home, where he's a carpenter, and he takes her to his tribal city for this Roman census. And there she is, bouncing along on this donkey as they plod along through the dusty roads. And then the inevitable happens and the baby's born, because that's what happens with babies. They come at the most inconvenient times, and there's no room at the inn. And if you remember from the kinder nativities, there are two innkeepers, and this is the truth, that slam the door in their faces and say no room because they're so stressed about Christmas. And the third innkeeper says, I haven't got any room in the inn, but I've got a stable around the back. And so Mary has the baby around the back and she puts the baby in the manger because there's nowhere else. And then there are angels in a field nearby and they are appearing to these shepherds who are looking after their sheep. And then the shepherds rush to see the Messiah. And then they're followed very closely by three wise men who've come from the east and they followed a star. And then they go back home and they dodge this real bad Herod, that puppet king, very wicked. And the new family flee off to Egypt. It's a beautiful story. It's our story of faith, isn't it? And it's full of inaccuracies and details that have been added like a Coca-Cola advert. We're going to unpick it a little bit today, just a couple of bits. But before I do, just acknowledge that there is in this room a range of theological understandings. There are people in this room for whom Jesus is the Messiah, who came according to the First Testament prophets, so all those promises. There are also people in the room for whom Jesus is a very godly man who came to show us and realign us to God's way of living and being in creation. So hopefully everyone can take something away from today, or I may just offend everybody. That's not unusual. All right, so the Romans have held a census. There's nothing unusual about a census. We hold censuses too in Australia. And I looked up, so I got my facts correct. I looked up the Australian Bureau of Statistics, and that says Australia's 18th national census will be held in 2021. How exciting is that? Almost as exciting as a general election. The census measures the number and key characteristics of people in Australia during the census period. Census data is used by people and organisations all over Australia to plan for services and infrastructure, such as roads, childcare, hospitals and schools, for every community in our nation. The census includes every person, including overseas visitors, in Australia, Norfolk Island, the territories of Cocos, in brackets Keeling Islands, and Christmas Island on census night. I wonder if they count the refugees on Christmas Island. Because they don't count for much else, do they? And note that every person is counted in the census. Following the 1967 referendum, the 1971 census changed the wording to include the First Peoples. They were first included in the count. So not everyone was counted. Not everyone counted. Not everyone was valued highly enough to be worthy of being counted. Not everyone wants to be counted in a census. Some people want to fly under the radar. Might have overstayed visas, or they might feel safer if they're not counted by any government agency. So the Romans had a really good reason for this census. It wasn't to plan for schools or childcare. It was to pay for the frontier wars that they were waging, because they wanted to conquer Britain. Who doesn't? And they needed to pay the soldiers, and they needed to pay for the infrastructure that goes along with war and colonisation. They also wanted to see if there were men that could be recruited into the army as soldiers. So the Romans sent everyone back to their tribal cities in order to count them and to exploit them even further. Now, the Jewish people lived in family groups. They lived in communities, looked out for each other, supported one another. Everyone counted. Now, I'm going to just put a caveat on that, because we know from the Gospels that it wasn't quite like that, was it? Because when people were lepers or had skin diseases or undiagnosed diseases, they were excluded from the community and they were forced to live outside the city walls. Okay? So it wasn't all sweetness and light. Yeah? We're human and we are flawed. But there would have been lots of family groups who were travelling together for this census. No one would have been travelling alone, let alone a guy with a heavily pregnant woman. They did everything together, these people, and they had 130 Ks to cover. So even for safety's sake, they wouldn't have been travelling on their own. They would have been travelling in a group. Think about the parable of the Good Samaritan. Bandits were everywhere. It wasn't safe to be on your own. Also, think about the story of where, remember when Jesus was left in the temple? And Mary and Joseph gone back for the festival, and they're travelling home with the rest of the group, and they assume that Jesus is travelling with another family, or is with the other kids, as you do. And then they suddenly realise he's missing, and leg it back, and find him in the temple. So these people travelled together. They weren't in isolated, vulnerable couples like that. The group would have been a mixture of ages, all looking after each other. The fitter, younger guys would have gone on ahead. They would have travelled faster. They would have gone on ahead to prepare for the others. So getting the accommodation ready, the food ready, just getting ready for everyone to settle. Reminds us of the readings in Isaiah and John the Baptist that we've had. The older people and the children would have had a slightly slower pace, but no one would have been left behind. The older woman, they would have been looking after the pregnant women like Mary, just watching over them, and collectively they would have watched over all of the children. The younger, fitter guys would also have been at the back of the group, travelling. They would have been just making sure everyone was safe, watching for issues, just making sure everybody kept up and no one lagged behind. So they were a community. They were moving together as one. Everyone counted. And probably everyone was counted to make sure no one was left behind. Now that's how pack animals move as well. You have the fitter animals at the front, finding the route, making sure everything's okay. You also have the fitter, and it's usually the males as well, sorry. They're at the front, they're at the sides, watching for danger, and they're at the back. And if anybody falls back, they stay with them. They stay with them till either they die or they're well enough to keep moving again. That's how pack animals move. Alert to danger, always. Now, some of you are probably sitting there wondering, well, why don't we know all these details from the Gospels? Well, it's because, probably, that this was assumed knowledge, because this is how they all lived. So those first people who were listening to the Gospel being read to them, they would have known this. This is their way of life. And just because it's not in the Gospel doesn't mean to say it didn't happen. We regard ourselves in our culture as individuals. And so when we rely on somebody else to do something for us, we feel like we're a bother. Yeah? We don't like to ask for help. But in that community, it was a proper community where everyone looked out for everybody else. All right, so the group reaches the accommodation that's been prepared. The baby decides to make an appearance. And the whole group is in the accommodation, cooking, eating, resting, relaxing, ready to move on to the next stage. And then Mary goes into labour, and there's nowhere or there's no room for for her to give birth, i.e. there's no privacy. The women would have done what they always did. They would have helped her labour and been there to support her as she gave birth. They would have found a corner in the accommodation or perhaps where the animals were kept so that she was as comfortable as she could be as she laboured. And that's probably what the Gospels meant when they say there was no place for her to give birth. We translate it as there was no place in the inn, but that's actually not there in the original. She had no privacy, but at least she was surrounded by community and experienced wise women who could help her. This is a community where everyone counts. And then there's another community that's drawn into the story. On a hillside, there's a community of shepherds watching over their flocks, and the angels appear, and then they go off down and they see the baby. But these guys, these shepherds are up on the hills. They stay with their sheep the whole time. They travel with them during the day to find food and water, and at night time they sleep with them. And the sheep, they're kind of enclosed in a very simple structure, and then there's a gateway where the shepherd sleeps so that nothing can get in or out without the shepherd waking. They're safe. If you think about John's Gospel, Jesus says, "I am the gate," i.e. the way in, the way out. But why weren't the shepherds counted in the census? Were the shepherds not counted? Did they not count? Well, no, they didn't. Because they were the homeless ones. They were the smelly ones that lived with their sheep. They were the ones who were on the edges of society. They were not part of the community. Here, God's angels appear to them, and they are the first outsiders invited into the story. People who are not valued enough to be counted in the census are those very people who are invited to visit the new king. In the act of running a census, the Romans are looking for people who are useful to them. They are valuable, either to join the army or to pay for the army through their taxes. In the birth of Jesus, God looks for people who are not counted, who are overlooked. Jesus continues to live this life where he shows us time and again what is to be valued and what has no value. Just as the indigenous people were not counted in the Australian census, so the shepherds were not sufficiently valued to be counted in the Roman census. And again, I wonder if the refugees on Christmas Island are counted. Let's hope by 2021 there are none there. So the Christmas story is very much about being a community, everyone having a value, no matter how old or young, infirm, fit, all are valued and all are counted. As we go home to our homes or our families' homes and we go back to our dinners, just invite you to ponder who you value. Who do you value in your life? If we're really truthful with ourselves, we're going to just set aside that Christmas card story and we're going to consider how we can do something, just something small, to live out that truth that everybody is counted. Don't be ambitious, start small and think about something that you can do, how you speak, how you act, that can convey to somebody else that they are valued, whether it's someone you already know or somebody that serves you in a shop. Show them that they are important enough to be counted. Leave that person in the same way that Jesus always left people feeling, knowing that they are loved just because they are, not because of who they are or where they're from, what they do. They're just loved. Matthew's Gospel tells us very clearly how much God loves us. He says, even the hairs on your head are counted. Even the hairs on your head are counted. So let this be the message that we share. That all are valued. All are valued. Just because we are.